Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
To the hour of the time. This is the only hour that ever was or ever will be. This is the most important hour in your entire life. For during this hour, you will decide your future and thus our collective futures. I am your host, William Cooper.
You know, we're dealing with a very critical and crucial time. Most crucial and critical times that I've ever witnessed, being as young as I am, you know. We all don't want to say nothing else, so we say as young as we are. Now I want to talk about the pronunciation and the realization. Now the educators, they call it ESP, positive thinking, right? Some of the people on the cross the other side of the pond call it vibes, vibrations, astrology, and all those different things, you understand? But I call what it is what it is. What it is what it is. Look at him. Now you see.
Apparently somebody called the Alex Jones broadcast. And asked him why he didn't have me on the air, or asked him something about me. Alex Jones said he had me on the air once before, several years ago, and had to cut me off the air because of the foul language that I used. So on the air tonight, I'm going to tell you, Alex Jones, you are a bold-faced, miserable, stinking little coward liar. Now let me say that again so there's no mistake about it. You can all tell Alex Jones that I said this, and I suspect he's listening because he does. Alex Jones, you are a bold-faced, stinking, rotten little coward liar. I was only on the Alex Jones show one time. It was years ago when I didn't know who he was, when I didn't realize what a liar and a coward and a sensationalist bullshit artist that he is. He was on one little FM station down in Texas. He wasn't on all the stuff that he's on now. And I agreed to be on his broadcast. That's when I was doing guest appearances on broadcasts years ago. I was not cut off. I did not use any kind of foul language whatsoever. He treated me very well. And I stayed on for the whole show. Some of you in Texas know that that's true because you heard the broadcast and you taped it. Later, when I found out who Alex Jones was and what he was doing to the truth, and what a cowardly liar and sensationalist he really is, every time he called me after that, I have always refused to appear on his broadcast. Absolutely refused to lend him any credibility whatsoever. I've also revealed him for the lying, sensationalist, bullshit artist that he is by every once in a while bringing to your attention the lies and the deceit and the rumors that he spreads over the airwaves that are not good for any of us, and they're not good for the nation.
It is what it is. That's what it is. It is what it is. That's what it is.
Hey, Hey, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Ooh, this sounds like it might be a different kind of show, huh? It is. This is a continuation of my conversations from the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest a couple weeks ago.
Give me some fruit.
Wait, James Brown didn't just say, give me some fruit, did he?
Give me some fruit.
Yeah. All right, I guess that settles that. So at the fest, I was talking to this guy, Jason Paradise, and Jason was one of Shane's co-hosts on his Liberty Under Attack radio show when they first had me on back in 2016. At the fest, Jason mentioned to me the work of William Cooper. Now, I'd heard of William Cooper, but I had never really dug into any of his work. All I really knew about him was he had some kind of crazy theories, and when I first started to hear his name, I felt like I had been there, done that, so to speak. And Jason told me that William Cooper was a very transformative figure in his process of coming to think differently about the world. He said he actually learned about William Cooper from our friend Shane Radliff, who's been on this show a couple of times. I've been on his show a couple of times. Shane is also the author of the book VONU, V-O-N-U, A Strategy for Self-Liberation. VONU, as Shane writes in the book summary, is an awkward contraction of the words voluntary, not vulnerable, and is premised around becoming as invulnerable to the coercion of the state and servile society as humanly possible. In VONU, A Strategy for Self-Liberation, Shane provides a primer on the subject, in addition to a much-needed development of the strategy. In addition to doing his Liberty Under Attack publications, Shane is currently the host of the VONU podcast. Shane started Liberty Under Attack in mid-2012. At that time, mind you, he was 20 years old. Now, Liberty Under Attack Radio featured something that I was fortunate enough to get to participate in, and I was also really impressed with. It was called the Direct Action Series. So this included topics like persuasion, winning hearts and minds, strategic withdrawal, homeschooling, psychology and interpersonal relationships, entrepreneurship, survivalism, financial autonomy, technological freedom, networking, and even civil disobedience. And I mentioned to Shane in this conversation that his building out of this comprehensive library of action evidenced a lot of wisdom for a young man. And I was very quickly impressed with the work he was doing when I first encountered him a few years ago. But Shane did not start there. In his bio on VonuPodcast.com, he talks about venturing down a conspiratorial rabbit hole and even being a sovereign citizen at one time. And I was reminded that my journey to where I am now had very similar origins. I was listening to Coast to Coast Radio and Alex Jones and feeling, even if I was never able to put it into these words, powerless and paranoid. So I was interested in the story of somebody who walked a similar path despite being 14 years younger, encountering all this information at a different time and through a different messenger. As you could tell from the intro to this show, even though Alex Jones was often accused of taking much of the information that he was presenting from Bill Cooper, the two were certainly not friends. And Bill Cooper viewed Alex Jones as a fairly dangerous figure. It's also worth pointing out their stories part ways even more considerably 2 months after September 11th, William Cooper was shot and killed by Apache County Sheriff's deputies in Arizona who were attempting to serve a 1998 arrest warrant. Alex Jones, on the other hand, went on to enjoy a more successful 21st century. So we're going to contrast our two experiences, having these men as our guides in the early days of trying to figure out what was going on in the world. I thought it made for a very interesting and different conversation, and I hope you enjoyed as well. More is coming from the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, including a conversation with Professor CJ and a live and interactive episode of School Sucks, where I take questions from the audience. Also, the first episode of a new monthly supporter-only series has arrived. It is called The Picture of the Month Club. It features Dutch from the Cine Manufacturing series. Our first film is Barry Lyndon. And as I wrote in the show description, if you saw Stanley Kubrick's Barry Lyndon and you loved it, this show is great. But if you saw Stanley Kubrick's Barry Lyndon and you hated it, this show is the greatest. I knew going into this that my friend Dutch is a knowledgeable and successful filmmaker, but I was blown away with some of his analysis of this film. And when I've surveyed the group before, people have asked for more content like this, film and media analysis, and it has now arrived in a form I am quite proud of. I'm really committed to showing appreciation for the people who keep School Sucks going through their support. If you want to join that club, including the Picture of the Month Club, we'd love to have you in the club. SchoolSucksProject.com/AV or Patreon.com/SchoolSucks. You can also access it through our Subscribestar platform, Subscribestar.com/SchoolSucksProject. And if you are interested in learning more about the upcoming Unversity Virtual Summit series, please go to sspuniversity.com. Use the access code SchoolSucks, one word, drop your email, and we'll be sending you updates in the very near future. And here is my conversation with Shane Radliff. The first 10 minutes, we get kind of caught up on what's new with Shane. He's a very busy and motivated young man. And after that, we move into this conversation that I've previewed for you here. Thanks for listening and take care.
What it is!
Shane Radliff, welcome back to School Sucks.
Hey, thanks for inviting me on. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Nice to be with you at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is what, your third, fourth fest?
Fifth fest.
Fifth fest.
I had to figure it up. I thought I'd only been here 4 years, but it's been my fifth year.
I know when we first encountered each other, it was on your show. It was 2016.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And I was recording with you guys before I got in the car and drove to Pork Fest.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
So can you refresh my audience's memory about what you're doing now?
Sure.
Actually update my audience, because you had Liberty Under Attack,
mm-hmm.
but you had also moved into publishing
mm-hmm.
last time we talked. And you also had the whole Vanu thing that you
yep.
were doing, right?
Yeah.
So that was what, last year,
mm-hmm.
middle of last year when you published your book, right?
Right, correct.
So what has happened since then?
Yeah, so when we recorded, I was in Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Stayed there for a few months. Met and lived with my co-host of the Vanu podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty cool. Didn't even know his given name. He goes by a pseudonym online, so I really didn't know who I was going to meet.
Oh wow!
But,
yeah.
But we'd been working together for 4 or 5 years in the alternative media. So, pretty close. So I lived there for a few months and. My living situation changed rather drastically, and Jason Henzo is also here at the fest. He invited me. He said he'd be driving through Austin, and he was going to go stay in Acapulco, and I could live with him for however long I wanted to. So
he went to Mexico.
Yep.
Wow.
Acapulco.
You drove there?
Yeah, we drove. Yeah.
How was that?
It was interesting. When I was telling friends and family, that was the most. They're like, "Oh, so you're going to Mexico? You're going to fly, right?" No.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to. So, it was interesting. Mexico's a different place. We tried to make it in one night because he's an animal when it comes to driving. I don't know why. But
wait, you tried to make it in one night from where?
From Texas.
From Austin?
It's gonna be like 21 hours. I mean, we were trying to do it in one shot, but we got to Querétaro, which is about just past Mexico City. So we had another 6 or 7 hours to go. It was an adventure. Mexico's a different place.
That was my question. Like, so you've driven a lot through the United States, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were planning to be like quite mobile.
Yep.
The last time we talked,
mm-hmm.
What was different about making that drive through Mexico? Because it was something that I actually considered doing at
yeah.
one point too. Was driving down there, and we were considering doing this driving to Acapulco.
Mm-hmm.
So you did it.
Uh-huh.
What was it like driving through Mexico like that?
I was kind of surprised because I figured the roads would be crappy. That's kind of what I've been told.
Mm-hmm.
We took toll roads the entire way there. I think you paid like $50 or $60 in tolls, but they're nice roads. You know, they're nice roads. Somewhere better than ones I've seen in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a different environment because we got over the border and he was going like 30 or 40 kilometers over the speed limit, passing cops, and I was like,
Yeah.
Does that matter here? He's like, no, they won't mess with you. So, it's just a different environment. We actually, in Mexico City, we got stopped twice by cops trying to extort us. And
how does that move work?
Well, it was twice within 5 minutes, mind you, for the same extortion thing. They saw gringos and they wanted to get some money. Yeah, basically, the cop was trying to get a bribe out of Henza, and he wasn't going to pay it because he knows he's been there quite a few times, so he knows how it goes. And
how does he approach you with that? Like, what does he say?
Well, there's a language barrier, obviously.
Yeah.
But
does he start like making the money sign with his fingers?
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, tossing out numbers and like a couple $100, $500, and it's like, nope, $10, $10.
Without even telling you what he's going to say you did wrong.
Well, apparently what apparently they have a law in Mexico City that foreign plates, whether foreign to Mexico or foreign, like different country, foreigners can't drive from 6 a.m. to 11 a.m. because the smog is just terrible in Mexico City, and it's overcrowded, busy. And apparently, I mean, when we got stopped, we thought it was just, BS. We thought he was just trying to get money out of us, but apparently it is a law. We were able to get out of those situations, both times without paying bribes. So, thankfully, a local walked up and didn't speak English, but he just said, extorsión, extorsión. And the cop just shook Jason's hand and let us go. So, that was certainly an interesting experience, kind of scary. Getting stopped by a handful of cops in Mexico City, made it through that, made it to Acapulco, and it was an incredible experience. It really was.
And then you made your way back here.
Yeah, so I was there from November to mid December, and I came back to Illinois for the holidays, and was planning on going back, but I had to do a bunch of stuff. I didn't have a permanent address at that time, and my registration was going to expire on my vehicle. And my passport is going to expire in May too. Mm-hmm. I was going to, stay back for a little while and then go back, to Acapulco. But, then what happened with John Galton, I'm not in a rush to go back there.
Yeah, I totally understand that. So what have you been doing here?
Yeah, so I came back whenever I came back for the holidays, I went back to Austin and tent camped.
Yeah.
It was an Army Corps of Engineer campsite, $6 a night, really nice place. Camped there for a couple weeks. And I talked to my parents. They're starting a family business, and they could have used my help getting started. We'd be way ahead, so I decided to come back here. I've got 22 acres in southern Illinois. I've got a big garden. I've got chickens, and I'm doing the off-grid homesteading thing. So yeah, you mentioned my plan was to go more mobile, but it seems that after that, a year ago when we talked, plans seem to have changed at least a little bit.
It's nice though. Your plans were flexible, right? Like far more flexible. Like what you were making was a very flexible and free plan for yourself at that time. And our conversation was sort of a follow up to my travels, which weren't too extensive. I mean, it was 6 weeks that I was on the road, but yeah, I mean, that lends itself to adapting to something else if necessary. And you had an opportunity. So that's what you're doing.
Right.
So what's new with Liberty Under Attack?
Yeah, so I was trying to make it to the I guess it would be the 4 year anniversary of the podcast before I killed it. I've got too much stuff going on. I'll get into a few of those things, but yeah, I closed down the podcast for Liberty Under Attack and basically just transitioned it over to Liberty Under Attack Publications, which is my main side hustle now. And we find books that are out of print, like old Volney publications or old libertarian publications that are very rare. I digitize so that they're available forever. And then I also put those out in paperback formats. And my book's also available under that, too. And we also offer services to new authors trying to navigate the publishing process. So we'll do everything from proofreading and editing to marketing, promotion, basically everything. So
you had a book by Lawrence Reed, I think, called the title was close to Are We Good Enough for Freedom? Is that what that book is called?
Yeah.
I'd never heard of that. Like, I'd heard of his other books, but I'd never heard of that book before, and I saw it, and I thumbed through it quickly while I was at your table. Obviously, it's an important book to you.
So I did this for the first time last year at the Fest, but the Freedom for Economic Education, they have a little program. It's mostly for classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
I did it last year. I submitted the same form this year, and they sent a big box of books to give away here at the Fest. So those aren't ones that I publish.
They said fee on them. That's right.
Yep.
Yep. Have you read that book?
I have not.
No, because I haven't either. And I'm thinking like, wow, that's a question that I've asked in like several different forms. And there it is on Shane's table. So I was just curious. I mean, I guess I could pick it up and read it.
Right.
I wonder when it was written, too. I wonder how long people have been asking that question.
Probably quite a long time.
Yeah. I mean, when was he writing?
Leonard Reed was the...
Leonard...
Did I say Lawrence? Lawrence Reed is his son.
Oh, okay.
And that might have been by his son. There's books by both of them there.
Yeah. So I wanted to have a different kind of conversation with you. That's kind of where you are now. Can I ask you one more question about that?
Sure.
Why publishing? Why print? Why is that something that you wanted to get into?
So I mean, I always, I'm not a digital reader anyway, so I love paperbacks. I know there are a lot of folks out there too that just don't like to read on a screen.
Right.
So that's kind of the first thing. But really, I was in Acapulco. I had a lot of time on my hands because my rent was like $100 a month.
Yeah.
Everything was cheap, so I had time on my hands. And I just, decided I would go ahead and go format books to put on Amazon. So I had time, and I just figured I should. And eventually, I got in contact with Miriam Zachariah, who's here. She's an artist, illustrator, designer, and I talked to her, and she said she'd help me do it. So she designs all the book covers, and
they're beautiful. They're really nice.
Awesome. Yeah, they definitely are. It kind of really wasn't planned at all. I was in Acapulco, and I decided to get started on it, and then I got back and. It just kind of happened. It's weird because I've been trying to get a good side hustle going in the alternative media or in my life for a while, and publishing was the thing, services to authors, which is crazy. It was the last thing I would ever expect to hit.
Right. But so you have this entrepreneurial venture. Mm-hmm. You have been a media producer. You're here. You started in a very different place, mm-hmm. and it was our friend, Jason Paradise, who used to co-host the show with mm-hmm. you. I think he was on there the first time I was on. He was saying that you had turned him on to Bill Cooper,
mm-hmm.
right? So now, for my audience, and one of the reasons why I thought this would be interesting is I started in the same place, right? I started with like Coast to Coast Radio and then got into Alex Jones. And that was a really motivating part of my journey to start thinking differently. You know, I was at this Red Pill conference recently. One of the presenters was from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, mm-hmm. Richard Gage. And I'm sitting there and I'm listening to his presentation and I'm going, you know, this was like negative thoughts I was having. Like, I like him. I like that he founded that organization, but I was like, there's not really much here that I didn't know in 2008.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then I started thinking like, well, what did this movement really do? It ate up certainly a lot of time and attention and energy resources from people. And it didn't really seem like it accomplished much. But mm-mm. maybe it was a kind of necessary step into, you know, something that was provocative and that got people differently, thinking differently, and then moved them into questioning other things.
Right.
And those things weren't specific events, but how does this event fit into the context of the world as it is that I clearly don't understand?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, that would just be an example of one person's path. So that was what it kind of was for me. I never knew anything about this Bill Cooper. So I wanted to hear your story, compare our stories. Now, you're much younger than I am. You're what, 26? 27?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you're probably actually going through this at a different time than I was. When did you discover Bill Cooper?
So it was actually, I guess what really got me started, I was like 19. I watched 9/11 Loose Change on Netflix.
Okay.
That kind of, it didn't get me started immediately, but I was in a different place in my life back then. All I cared about was drugs and women. And I just randomly came across this documentary and watched it. And I was like, whoa.
What made you watch it?
I don't know. I have no idea. I'd never looked into anything like that before. I mean, I love the History Channel and such. I love documentaries, but
yeah.
So I guess that might have been just the reason I clicked on it.
Yeah, I saw one. It was at the bottom shelf of a video store. You're 27. You know what a video store is?
Yes.
So it was my girlfriend and I. It was probably 2005. We're walking around and we see this 9/11 documentary. It wasn't Loose Change, it was something else. So we get it and we watch it and we're like, holy shit. Now, I had far less developed critical thinking skills than I do now. So if something made it onto a tape or a DVD or whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
I took it seriously, mm-hmm. right? And I don't think I went at it just with a critical eye that I should have. And that was probably true with a lot of things that I was encountering back then. And like Coast to Coast, if you're familiar with this radio
yep.
program, was actually pretty good training because some stuff was just so outlandish that you're like, well, okay. That actually sent me like to the internet to start like looking things up. Now I'm in my late 20s at this point. I might've been mm-hmm. like your age or a little bit older at this point. Wait, yeah. I was like your age at this point. So for you, you're younger than I was. You find this Loose Change documentary that I think we've all seen.
Mm-hmm.
How does that get you to Bill Cooper, and what does that change for you?
Yeah, basically, so I watched this documentary and I didn't act upon it or anything for quite some time. It was just kind of something I watched, thought about.
And the wheels were turning, though, a little bit.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. So really, it probably would have been maybe even like a year later. Mm-hmm. I came across, like I mentioned, 9/11 was kind of the thing that really first got me started looking into these things. Well, there was a video I came across on YouTube called Bill Cooper Predicts 9/11. I didn't know who the hell this guy was. No idea. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, you see titles like that, they're just clickbait.
Yeah.
So I clicked on it, and it was a clip from a June 2001 episode of his Hour of the Time radio show, which was on like shortwave radio and stuff too. So like this was old. Like he started doing radio. He wrote his book in the early 90s before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
So I found this this video. And he said, in it, whatever they're going to blame on Osama bin Laden, don't you even believe it. This Osama bin Laden's, you know, wanted, you know, he's a wanted man, you know, internationally. But this reporter stumbles into his
hideout and interviews him. So why do all these fools believe this charade? That a CNN reporter and his little camera crew can do with all the money and all the assets and all the eavesdropping and all the intelligence and all the satellites and all the undercover operatives in the world can never do. It's because they're not trying, they don't want to. Osama bin Laden is their creation and he is serving them well. I mean, is this some kind of incredible joke that people are so stupid they'll fall for this? And now we're being bombarded with messages that Osama bin Laden is planning to attack the United States of America and Israel. Let me tell you something. If he's an enemy of Israel and the Mossad can't find him, then this thing is the biggest joke that you ever heard of in your life. And I'm telling you, be prepared for a major attack. But it won't be Osama bin Laden. It will be those behind the New World Order who once again want to take the guns and the freedom away from the American people, because we're the only ones left in the world who can oppose the destruction of freedom in the world and the implementation of a one-world totalitarian socialist government, and that is the goal. And whatever is going to happen that they're going to blame on Osama bin Laden, don't you even believe it.
I was like, wow, this was, you know, June, clearly months before 9/11. What did this guy know?
So do you think when Alex Jones, do you know about Alex Jones doing something very similar in July of that year?
The point is, if any terrorism comes, it's from this government. And if there was an outside threat like a bin Laden, who was a known CIA asset in the 80s, running the Mujahideen War, and whose family builds all the military bases over in Saudi Arabia right now, and sits on the board of Iridium Satellite, he's the boogeyman they need in this Orwellian phony system. I want the White House numbers up there now. A big part of this solution, after you research all the government terrorism and check out what I'm saying is true, call the White House and tell them, we know the government's planning terrorism. We know Oklahoma City and World Trade Center was terrorism. We know the Joint Chiefs of Staff wanted to blow up airliners, Baltimore Sun. If you do it, we're going to blame you because we know who's up to it. Or if you let some terrorist group do it, like the World Trade Center, we know who to blame. And you could save the planet.
Didn't he always get accused of, like, biting off Bill Cooper's stuff?
So Bill was on Alex's show, I think, in 2000 or 2001.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they were familiar with each other. But Alex Jones did this broadcast on Y2K.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill was not happy. He had to call out Alex Jones. Alex Jones was saying that, you know, as he's getting things off the fax machine, looks like Russians are taking over nuclear reactors, you know, the end is near, like that sort of thing. So Bill saw.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
All right, let's go ahead and get to this article. Associated Press, this came out at 7:22 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Today, December 31st, 1999. Pennsylvania nuclear plant shut down one of the two nuclear reactors at PECO Energy Co.'s Limerick Generating Station has shut down this morning after a piece of equipment failed. Company spokesman Neil McDermott said the problem was not Y2K related. It was declared an unusual event, the least serious emergency classification of a nuclear power plant. They got to have a serious emergency to shut down a plant, ladies and gentlemen. You power one down, you're not going to power it up for at least days. It was declared an unusual event. At 2:55 a.m., shutdown occurred when an insulator on the main generator transformer from Limerick 2 failed. We had reports yesterday of this. Off the record, I would not report it, but I had it from a good source that this plant was having problem along with four other plants. I may just go ahead and report it here.
From our information, it is not this transformer that they're talking about. They wouldn't just shut a plant down over that. Something serious may be going on there. So that the central government, known as the federal government, the occupational government in Washington, D.C., has set up a huge $50 million command bunker hooked into all the FEMA boxes that can take over all the shortwave broadcast and commercial AM and FM stations, as well as television broadcast stations. And we hope they do not activate that, ladies and gentlemen. Police and military are on high alert, running around looking for supposed boogeymen and terrorists under every rock. Military are highly visible now. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there are trains of military equipment moving into Austin. Two nights ago, on Wednesday night, Fox News reported that the airport will be used as a massive holding facility for troublemakers or rioters here in Austin that has no history of riots. They need to get that country locked down so they can stage the election for Vladimir Putin. I mean, this guy is a demon. Have you seen this guy? It's just how he's raging with power. I'm Alex Jones. I'm your host. I'm just one of the great hosts here on the GCN Radio Network, and I've been very passionate today because I can't even keep track of all the developing news that's coming in. I'm not going to get into that. I'm not even going to say it's 6 to 7 reactors across the country. I'm not even going to. It's bad, and I got this news about the Pennsylvania plant early yesterday, got it again off air, confirmed it with someone that is 99% accurate, about like I am, trying to report the truth, and now I got the Associated Press saying, well, they shut the whole plant down, but they call it an unusual event, the least serious emergency classification nuclear power plant. Well, it's got to be pretty bad for them to power a plant down. As the developments move forward with this Y2K and this gear up for clamping down America and Russia and around the world by globalist forces, we'll be bringing you the news as long as we're here on the air.
Time is getting shorter until Y2K. If you want to be sure your family and loved ones weather the potential Y2K storm of delays, shortages, or interruptions of services, then now is the time to stock up on emergency supplies and a home food reserve.
So Bill called him out on that. Apparently, Bill was on his show before. And, you know, Bill started talking. He had a large radio show. He's probably bigger than Alex Jones at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Alex went on the air and basically just said, oh, you know, Bill's a drunk. You know, don't believe anything that he says. Brush it aside.
But Bill Cooper at this point had some cred. He had written this book. It was called Behold a Pale Horse mm-hmm. in the early 90s,
yep.
like you said. And he probably had a sizable following on the radio at mm-hmm. that point. So Alex Jones, who wasn't nobody then, but was probably not as well known as trust is kind of a tricky word in that space.
Yeah.
But he didn't have the faith accumulation that Bill Cooper had at that point. But it's around this time that Alex Jones, I mean, it's 9/11 where Alex Jones starts to take over, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but really, right after Bill died. I mean, I think it was a month or two after 9/11, Bill was killed.
Yeah.
Alex. I mean, Alex was kind of the default replacement, I guess. Well, just kind of what happened.
How into it did you get? So you find the video of him predicting, or at least predicting that there's going to be some kind of event that Osama bin Laden is blamed for, mm-hmm. in his words. What do you do from there?
So obviously, I as I tend to do with most things, most new things now, I got a little obsessed.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I worked at that time. I worked at a moving company, and I did a lot of packing.
Mm-hmm.
Packed up people's houses. So I had like 10 to 12 hours every single day just to listen to Bill Cooper's show, Hour of the Time. Now, these aren't on podcast feeds or anything. They're on the website, so I had to go on my phone. This would have been like 5 or 6 years ago, and actually open up the MP3 file in the player. So it's not organized the greatest. Doyle could do a little better job. But anyway, they're all up there, which is the important thing. So I went through, there's like 2,000 hours, or some crazy number of radio shows up
there. Is this all still available?
Yep.
Wow. All right.
So I worked my way through every single one of them over the span of like 1 to 2 years.
Mm-hmm. What would you say was his kind of unifying worldview, right? So like if Alex Jones, I hate, it just makes it easy to keep comparing them, even though I know it's maybe unfair. Obviously, his position has changed and his basic like MO has been tightening the in-group by accentuating the presence and the danger of the out-group. And the out-group kind of has changed a little bit, but some things that he's been consistent on since I first heard of him when he was talking about 9/11, maybe like in 2005, around there,
mm-hmm.
globalism. He was always anti-immigration. He always saw or illegal immigration, at least, because he saw that as a way of, like, even more conservative politicians and corporations moving people in as cheap labor, mm-hmm. and it was undermining Americans. When I first, I know that before that he was more focused on local Texas issues, and he certainly had his pick, right, with Waco. I know he was there. I know he went deep into the Oklahoma City thing, mm-hmm. but always from the same position of kind of
right.
It's not paranoia feels kind of unfair, but from the outside, when you first encounter it, that's what it looks like. Like, it's kind of an unfair label to stick to him. You know, we were recording shows after he went on Piers Morgan and had that weird meltdown.
Yep.
I was like, okay, this guy. And then he declared himself the next day on his show the leader of the Liberty Movement. I was like, all right, this is a plan. This is this guy. There's some other agenda here. Like, I was very suspicious. And my friend and I did a show about it, and we kind of broke down that interview and tried to understand what he's all about. But I mean, quite honestly, I still don't understand what he's all about. But his presentation is globalism and just about anything that happens that's like a catastrophic, catalyzing event is synthetic, mm-hmm. right? So, and of course, patriotism, I know he would throw the word libertarian around, but how would you describe Bill Cooper in the same terms as far as like a, you know, a unifying view of what's happening in the country and the world?
Yeah, so you know, they're really not. I'd say their baseline views, constitutionalism, anti-New World Order, is how Bill would have put it.
Yes.
I mean, they're pretty common on those sorts of things. But yeah, Bill was a rigid constitutionalist. He wouldn't have fallen for the Trump thing like Alex did.
Right.
Yeah. Anti New World Order, pro constitution, 100%. He was one of his great feats, I think, was he rallied the militia in Arizona. You know, he actually got them kind of organized. I don't know, for me being a constitutionalist at that time, that was pretty cool, because militias, you know, never see those around anymore. You don't hear anything about them. I mean, he went as far as Alex did on some things. Like the JFK assassination, there's a video online, and I don't remember the title of it. JFK, the Fallen King, or something like that.
Yeah.
And he goes through, and keep in mind, this is like early 1990s, so it's like it's a really terrible quality video, but he goes through and looks at like all the symbolism where Kennedy was killed. And kind of goes through, like, you know, the phalanx of Osiris is here.
Have you ever been there?
No, I have not.
It's an eerie place.
Is it?
And I understand that it's eerie because John F. Kennedy was shot there and there's a huge conspiracy around it. But it is shockingly small, like how much of a shooting gallery it actually is. Mm-hmm. Like, and how where he was shot was like, my goodness, there were so many different ways to target somebody, like right where, from so many different angles. It's definitely interesting, and I have looked at that symbolism of the spot too, but go on.
I mean, I would say that Bill probably went a little more off of was a little more rigorous in some things, mm-hmm. As far as verifying his research, and others, no, like there's quite a few things in Behold a Pale Horse that are just blatantly ridiculous.
What's the push that the book makes?
He just explains what the government, what the New World Order is doing. He goes through kind of the mystery schools, Mystery Babylon, talks about kind of, you know, where these things started. His belief was that, you know, this is just a long plan that's being put in place.
So it had continuity.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, he basically just covered what happened, you know, what was going on. Some ridiculous conspiracies. One of them that's funniest to me is that he said that like the rulers of the real rulers of the United States and the real rulers of Russia meet in a submarine in like the North Pole underwater so they can avoid being surveilled. There's some ridiculous stuff.
Do you offer any evidence?
I mean, I don't remember for that specific claim. But he was, and I guess I should have mentioned this. He was his family had a lot of history in naval intelligence.
Yeah.
And he did it as well. So he had some classified documents that he found. He found silent weapons for quiet wars just on a printer, is what he said. And that made it into the book. It's the first chapter, which is basically just a guide for enslaving humanity.
Through mostly subversion or?
it's the same thing as you hear in the conspiracy circles. Control the money, control the resources. And it obviously goes a lot further than that. But
So I was going to ask you at the end how you feel about him now, but I think we're going to be revealing that along the way. I can tell in some of the things that you're saying. So the other interesting thing, I guess, that's different in our stories is I experienced a lot of the world with my conspiracy people, Alex Jones included. Like, mm-hmm. So I kind of jettisoned Coast to Coast Radio once it was, you know, ghosts and giants and whatever. But the political thing is what I picked up from there, namely 9/11. Like, that was really what I tried to follow mm-hmm. and started to connect to other people. Like, this is around the time, 2006, 2007, that I found Loose Change and other people who were talking about this and putting 9/11 into a larger context, right? So from there, I'm actually experiencing a lot of events with these people, like, you know, whether it's InfoWars or whoever's talking about it, and YouTube starts to become more of a thing. You're encountering Bill Cooper after he's dead. You experience nothing with him, right? Because he died when you were like
9 years old.
Nine, yeah. So you actually go back through his radio archives and hear what he had to say.
Yeah, and it was really awesome. Like, going through, because he did episodes on Oklahoma City and you know, the first World Trade Center. Like, he did episodes on, like, all of those events too.
Yeah,
And more of them. So it was really
awesome.
Was
that how you learned about them? I mean,
I'd heard of them, but I didn't know. Like obviously, when you hear someone like reporting, you know, on the day that it's happening, it's different than looking back in the history book. So, like, it was really. I mean, I'd heard of those events, but I really didn't know a whole lot about them or the details. And it was cool hearing everything from A to B, how, you know, he's getting his information, what he's been able to verify, and that sort of stuff. So that was a cool part of that too.
But right out the gate, like, so if we just take Oklahoma City for example, right out the gate, he's saying this is not what you're hearing is not the truth.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. Was he known for making any other predictions, even if they were vague ahead of time? Like, I mean, so he's got his whole framework that he's putting news events into. But to nail down, like, the Osama bin Laden thing is pretty mm-hmm. interesting, right? I don't know if he, because to me, he's always just been this very intriguing figure that I always felt like I had, for lack of a better word, outgrown that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, just kind of lumping him in with somebody like Jones, or, you know, the patriot constitutionalist thing. Like, I just felt by the time I even learned who he was,
right,
that why would I go back to do that? But then I just kept hearing his name and hearing more about him through the year. I mean, this has been going on for me for, like, since I became a libertarian. So we're talking mm-hmm. like 12, 13 years, maybe a little more at this point. Yeah, like when I said that this was your guy, this was one of the central figures in getting you from, I guess, just being a regular teenage Joe to where you are now.
Yeah.
And I said, I want to know everything you know, or as much as you can tell me in an hour about what you know and how this happened.
Yeah.
So you read the book, you go through the radio archives. How did you feel, and how much were you checking what he was saying or trying to balance what he was saying with other sources? And how hungry did it make you for, you know, trying to understand the bigger picture, like, beyond what he's talking about or saying, all right, I've identified from listening to all these hours or from reading this book what his framework is, what his view of the world is. Mm-hmm. I want to compare that to somebody else's. Do you have a process like that?
I'll be honest. Yeah, back then I was young. I obviously didn't learn how to do proper research.
Oh, same.
In schools. So yeah, I was very careless up until until I became an anarchist, at least, and probably even a year beyond that until I started applying the trivia method and things like that. But yeah, I was not very vigorous in my research. I listened to the podcast and I kind of just took what he said at face value for most things,
mm-hmm.
Which obviously is unwise. Obviously unwise, and especially like with what he was talking about. Like, he after I watched that video where he predicted 9/11, I found his Mystery Babylon series, which is like 20-something episodes, and he goes into the mystery schools like Freemasonry and Ordo Templi Orientis and all these secret societies that are secretly controlling everything that's happening in the world.
He's building a very big picture that you're not treating very skeptically.
Right, yeah. So yeah, I really didn't verify much. That was my main reason for switching ideologies and things that I, you know, my belief so much is because I just didn't really verify.
Well, how did that happen? Like what? Something changed, right? Because now you're here, right? So, what was it that broke you? And not that like Bill Cooper wasn't helpful in making you walk a path, but what changed that took you outside of that?
Yeah, yeah. He was certainly instrumental. Like I credit him more than anyone else for getting me here, because it took a lot of hours. I mean, it took a lot of hours of listening to him and trying to figure things out, trying to understand what was going on in the world. But yeah, things really changed. I guess I made it through the archives, and I guess at that time I got a new job, so I didn't have as much time to. Not that I could have gone and re-listened, and I would have, but I didn't have a whole lot of time. I got on to other things.
Mm-hmm.
One of the steps was I kind of approached sovereign citizen sort of tactics.
That's a logical next step. Sure.
Yeah. So I joined a group on Facebook, and their strategy was basically there are these magic four sentences. If you say them in court, they have to release you, and then you can build them for their time, and they can pay you.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that ran it was living in the Philippines, so he was trying to get people in America to get tickets on purpose, show up to court and read these four sentences to show that they work. So there were a few people that did it. Some people went and passed out flyers. There's an older lady that lived like 45 minutes away from me that was in this group, and she actually went and put out flyers, the four sentences, say these in court.
There was a lot of overlap. When I started listening to Free Talk Live in 2006, there was a lot of overlap with this kind of crowd too. So I remember this. Yeah.
Yeah. I would have stayed in that group. Like I would have been in there, but there was a disagreement with, within a month or two, and I was an idiot at that time.
How old are you now?
I would have been like 21, 22, somewhere around there.
Okay.
And,
this was like 2014.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
All right. Okay.
So, that's right. Cause I started the podcast in 2015. This would have been summer of 2014.
Cause like you're telling this story, and I keep like in my effort to relate to you, I keep like going in my head to like 2007. Right, which is a totally different world. It's a totally different world. So because there weren't any Facebook groups. But so there's an argument in the group, and
I very very quickly was giving like seminars on subjects. I did one or two of them, and there's some disagreement with the founder of it. I said, well, you're in the Philippines. You're telling people to do this. I feel like that's kind of. You're telling people to take a risk that you're not willing to take.
Sure,
and
yeah.
Eventually I kind of left and moved on. And I remembered, and at that time, I still would go back and listen to some of Bill Cooper. And I remembered something that he said. He was like, if you want me to cover, people tell me they want me to cover a subject, they want me to talk about something, they want me to research something, well, start your own radio show, start your own newspaper, start your own whatever. That's free press. You can start your own outlet. And that was one of the main things that drove me to start a radio show just a few months later, was that statement. And there's also a quote which I have pulled up that was very huge. And I mean, that still translates into what I do today.
Yeah.
He said, like it or not, everything is changing. The result will be the most wonderful experience in the history of man, or the most horrible enslavement that you can imagine. Be active or abdicate. The future is in your hands. And he said that in 1989. So Bill was really the one that got me active, and my first step was learning, trying to understand what was going on.
Yeah, because you are like in your work repeatedly action oriented, right? Mm-hmm. It's such a part of what you do. Yeah, we can talk about problems, but you're explicitly saying, okay, this, what did you call it?
Yeah, we had the direct action.
Direct
series.
Action. That was it. Mm-hmm. That was it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And making a commitment to do that means you never get lost in reactiveness or powerlessness.
Right.
And I love that. I thought that was great. I thought that was that was a lot of wisdom for a young person who was new to these ideas to know that that had to be in there. So that was like one of the first things I noticed about what you were doing. But that came from Bill Cooper was a huge influence in that.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yep. Yep. The radio show wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be at this festival because I found out about the fest through the radio show. I mean, he was absolutely instrumental. And now, obviously, I don't. I kind of regret. There was a Christmas where I bought like five copies and like wrote letters to like family members, like telling them to read the book. I kind of regret that now from some of the stuff that was in it. But
I've done that too. I think I've done that in the past. Like, Merry Christmas. Here's my views. Put them in your head.
Yeah. Yeah, so I kind of regret that now. But I mean, they're close friends and family. They aren't going to view me differently. But and every once in a while, I will go back and listen to an episode, because I mean, I still appreciate the work that he did. I think it was really valuable. And well, I don't know this for sure, but as what happened with us. Conspiracies led us. You know, they were just a step in the journey. And I guess I will say one of the risks and something I've seen time and time again with even, you know, I call them this now, or actually I don't call them this, but this is a term that's going around, Kooptard.
Yeah.
People that just listen to everything he says and never go beyond it. Never. So there's still folks that are kind of stuck in that. And that's one of the things that I warn about, you know, like I think, I don't, you know, ridicule people that look at conspiracies, but I fear, that they get stuck in the rabbit hole and never escape. And then also most conspiracists I know aren't anarchists, they're constitutionalists. So they never, a lot of those folks never make the complete jump, which is strange because if you think the government's doing all of these things, if you think the secret societies are controlling governments, like if they're doing all of these really horrible things, it seems like there's a disconnect there.
It's a weird place to look for solutions ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right.
And the solutions are government oriented. Only it's locally based, which is better. But if your entire work is based on investigating conspiracies, what action is there for you other than really researching? I mean, there's
and
not much
and
else.
More darkness, you know. You know, I didn't see this. I think I saw elements of this at the Red Pill conference, but I saw a lot of constructiveness and a lot of positivity, too, especially considering I was there around Richard Grove's course and he attracted some really great people. So that's mm-hmm. who I was spending most of my time with. Just kind of wandering around the conference and getting and picking up like on the subtleties of things. There is that element to conspiracy where some of us maybe were really conspiratorial would suggest that conspiracy theories themselves are disempowering, right? Because if you take an event like 9/11 and you say, okay, the government perpetrated this, whatever that means, mm-hmm. it can mean all kinds of different things, or some element inside the government perpetrated this, while the rest of the government was oblivious to it yeah. or silent about it, then the entire media lied about it and covered it up. And you're one person at home in front of your computer, what power could you possibly have? So even if it's accidental, it has a psyop feature to it itself.
Right, right? And that's a very good point. I wrote an article probably like a year ago. It was titled An Answer to the Omnipotence of State, and I looked into that myself and conspiracies for one example, because you're right, if the government's this omnipotent, omniscient, and all of these, you know, godlike characteristics, that they can orchestrate these events, then it's always been here, it's going to be here forever. I mean, there's not much you can do.
Yeah, and what kind of power could a person or even a group of awakened people have against a plan that, you know, according to Bill Cooper or others, thousands of years in the making, right?
Yeah. How do you change that course as one individual?
Right.
You can't.
No. So I think if it were all true, understanding that it exists, like I think I said last night, identifying the predators in your environment mm-hmm. is an important step for your own safety and survival.
Right.
But there has to be some kind of follow-up. And when you use the phrase Kooptards, it reminds me of the InfoWars crowd where it's basically a closed system, yeah. right? And I do – the one thing that I knew about Bill Cooper is that Alex Jones had kind of modeled a lot of what he does after Bill Cooper, not just in what he says – but whether Bill Cooper did it intentionally or not, creating a culture around the word of the man,
yeah.
right? So InfoWars is very much a closed system. It will tell you everything from the news you need to the pills you need to take. I'm not knocking right. him for advertising or anything, but everything is branded InfoWars, mm-hmm. and it is like a one-stop shop for all your solutions to, you know, surviving the scourge of the New World Order.
Right.
So and when people don't operate outside of that world, obviously they're doing themselves a great disservice. So you, inspired by Bill Cooper, though, start this show, start talking to people on this show, but you still have some changes to make, some yeah. revelations to have, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of begrudgingly held on to the label of constitutionalist after the Sovereign Citizen Group. I was kind of lost. I was searching for an idea. I was searching for an ideology, admittedly. But I started Libertarian Attack Radio as an attempt to replace Bill's show. So, I mean, we talked about similar subjects for the first few months, and then I was talking to anarchists, and I became an anarchist.
What would you remember, like a specific revelatory moment that changed things, or a show, even if it took a whole show?
Really, it just came down to that I didn't trust people. Uh-huh. I didn't trust anybody. I trust very few people. So how could I ever trust them without a government?
Right.
So someone explained, well, if you can't trust them, then why? How could you trust them in a position of power?
Do you remember who explained this to you?
I do not know. I don't. Yeah, I'm not sure who it was.
Somebody deserves the credit for that, though. Yeah. So how are you doing? Was it just an interview show, or were you taking calls or doing roundtables, or what was the format before I encountered you?
Yeah. So it was live radio up until, I think, the end of 2016. So we had it wasn't a large show. So like we'd have a caller show or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
People would call in and bring up whatever they wanted to. We kind of just left it open. Similar subjects. It was interviewed someone who I called at that time, like the next Bill Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
His name's Robert Bruce. He runs I can't remember what it's called. I can't remember what his has to do with one of the FEMA zones.
But, I don't know the FEMA zones, but I get the idea.
he started a radio network with that name. But I had him on, and I called him like the next Bill Cooper, and someone called in and just ripped us a new one.
Mm-hmm.
Just frustrated, angry, because Bill Cooper is the only Bill Cooper.
Yeah.
So that was my first. That was like my first actual interaction with one of those folks. And I mean, at that point, I tried to go beyond what Bill said, but he didn't. Robert was expanding. He did more research, caller didn't like it too much, to say the least.
So you also talked about discovering and embracing the Trivium method, and that helping you put somebody like Bill Cooper and his work, and probably, as a result, the work of several others, the ideas and claims of several others,
mm-hmm.
into a kind of context, right? Like there's the world and these things happen and people apply these sort of singular views to it. And, they get locked into those ideas and they, develop their own dialectic around that, their own language around that, even in some cases. And there is certainly, as they project their messages to more people, they develop their own kinds of cultures around that too. So how did you start utilizing the Trivium and applying it to this?
Yeah, so I think the first time I heard of the Trivium method, it would have been sometime in 2016. I think I actually interviewed Daryl Becker on the Direct Action series on the Trivium method.
Okay.
I didn't really understand it until that point. So it was probably early 2016.
Do you remember why you knew you should do that, or what gave you the idea to do that?
I mean, I probably heard about it on your show. Honestly.
Okay.
I probably heard about it initially on your show. And
how did you find my show?
Actually, the first fest I came to here, hadn't heard of your show, and I heard people talk about School Sucks all over the place, and I was like, well, I guess I should probably check it out. So, yeah.
Well, that's great. I wasn't even here then.
No, you weren't.
It's awesome that people were doing that. All right, so Daryl introduces the Trivium to you,
mm-hmm.
or explains it, I'm guessing, pretty long form to you.
Yeah.
And what kind of experience is that, and what do you do next?
I continue to, doing research on it. I went to triviumeducation.com and looked over all the resources there in the Quadrivium, which I didn't know existed until mm-hmm. later for some reason. Really, I'm more skeptical. I consume a lot of information from a lot of different sources, but checking information on like I used to do.
Now, I'll say something mildly controversial. We implicitly learn the steps of the Trivium in public school,
mm-hmm.
right? Like we are given vocabulary words that relate to a chapter that focuses on one thing. Once we have the vocabulary words and we define them, like I remember doing this in science, I remember doing this in social studies,
mm-hmm.
we see them come together in some kind of story, right? So we see them coalesce into a narrative where these words make sense together,
mm-hmm.
right? And then eventually we are asked to demonstrate our understanding of this thing, usually on something we don't want to do, like a paper yeah. or a test or whatever. But it's never made explicit, right? As we all grew up or like became politically or philosophically aware in an increasingly, year after year, an increasingly complex world, a lot of us, overwhelmed as we should be, and this is really like, I remember, I mean, when you were what, 7 when 9/11 happened? Around eight years old?
2001. Yeah, I would have been not 8 or 9.
Yeah. So I was 20. I was working at a ski resort. And I just remember, there's probably very little I could say about it that doesn't sound cliche at this point. But like the whole world changed in that single day, right? Mm-hmm. Like I remember the internet was like, what was I doing? had a Yahoo, what was it called? You could make your own Yahoo page, yeah, right? Where you could just put, no one else could even see it, right? So it wasn't even like as good as MySpace,
right,
but you could, it would show you everything you wanted to know about the internet. So I could mm-hmm. put, these are the movie, these are the movies that are going to play at the theater near me. And it would display it all in this like multi-column display. It was like, you felt like you made your own web page of the things that you were interested in.
Right.
And that was the most useful and like personal thing I could imagine about the internet. And I just remember the next day of my life was, because I remember being at work and the internet went down when 9/11 happened. Like you couldn't refresh Yahoo News.
Really?
Yeah. And this went on for a couple hours. And I have no explanation for that. But the next day, the internet was like the play, it was sucking you in, right? And the television was the same. Like CNN, the networks, I think MSNBC existed at that point.
I was playing basketball outside and I was running inside and out watching Fox News.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Fox News existed then. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. So my whole alertness to the world was changed by that event because it's like, how could something so shocking happen? It was also solved that day, right? They knew exactly who did it by the time it got dark. And how could something so devastating and so traumatizing be perpetrated by a group of people that we knew nothing about, right? Because I also thought at that time, I thought I was fairly well-informed, maybe not so much on current events, but you know, I graduated from college. I had studied history. I thought I had a pretty good understanding of like the country and the world, and even like you'll get this in college that what most people think about the world isn't the truth,
mm-hmm.
which kind of primed me to want to become like that revolutionary history teacher. And that was also like when I told somebody I was a teacher, they told me about Coast to Coast Radio a few years later. But to backtrack to the complexity of the world. Right. Mm-hmm. That was how we got off on this whole 9/11 thing. A lot of people wanted to make meaning out of something that was increasingly confusing and they all understood it.
Mm-hmm.
So the argument from authority became even more powerful. If somebody could take over one of these new platforms, I mean, radio wasn't a new platform, but like I'm the guy who sits at the desk and tells you how it is. Like only really Rush Limbaugh had done that. Like in much of it is opinionated. I'm applying my views to current events.
Right.
Like I don't remember much of that on Fox News at all. And there were people expressing political opinions on shows, but there wasn't like a person with their own presence and their own brand that I had ever encountered before that. But that became, even though I'm sure it existed before, and even though I'm sure it seduced people before 9/11, it seemed like over the next couple of years, leading up to Afghanistan, which I think was that year, and leading up to Iraq, and the constant threats of like, I mean, there's this big anthrax thing later,
right,
like in the months that followed. It was like a mm-hmm. super traumatizing couple of months. You had to just go to somebody and trust them if you didn't have critical thinking skills.
Yeah.
Right? Now, most people went to the television and that was fine. But a lot of us who I think were primed to do so wandered into these other places
mm-hmm.
and just started. For me, the first thing was Coast to Coast Radio. It was George mm-hmm. Norrie. And then it was Alex Jones. And then it was sort of the offshoots of that. But if you don't have a method to apply to this constant influx of information, all you can do is trust the person who presents as if they have a method, they have understanding. Unfortunately, that's still a problem today, right? Like people are still sucked into that today. And people, like if something happens, I will say, oh, I wonder what Professor CJ would think of that. Or
right.
I wonder what Jay Dyer would think of that.
Mm-hmm.
Or even I wonder what Stephen Molyneux would think of that. Or I wonder what he would have to say about that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that that's where I'm going to get my opinion about it. But I was fortunate enough to, years ago, not only embrace the skepticism, but then understand eventually that I needed a method,
right?
And the method begins with asking a series of questions about basically anything that you encounter.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have that, you're basically, there's just handles on you for other people to move you around how they want to move you around. And that's unfortunate. So
you supposed to better answer your question on how I apply it. I mean, I am all about definitions now. I mean, on the Vonnie podcast, obviously it's a new term for I mean, we started the podcast, it was brand new to people, so we started every episode with definitions. I mean, that's the biggest thing I've taken away from the trivia method is grammar, understanding the terms and being on the same level if you're having a conversation with somebody. I mean, that's kind of the one of the major things with it, because if you're talking to somebody and you are talking about capitalism and John's a socialist, John's gonna have a different view on capitalism than you are.
I've really
taken to the definitions.
No, you have. And one of the things that you did, it was a couple of years ago and I was really impressed with it, is you moderated a debate, and I think it was on parenting. It was Kevin Geary. Mm-hmm. And I forget the other guy because he lost the debate. But
yeah, it was my co-host of the Vonnie podcast, Cal Reardon.
Right.
Yep.
So he took a very angry tone with, and he was, and you were, I knew that you were more on Kevin's side about the thing, but you asked for repeated clarification. And I thought that is good debate moderation, but I also knew you were a young guy. So I said, oh, this is pretty good moderating.
Good deal.
This guy's pretty good at moderating a debate, right? He's asking the right questions. I remember watching Corbett do it. Richard Grove had like a series of debates. He had this lawyer friend who was debating from a more. You saw this from a more constitution. So I think Corbett was the moderator, and one was Larkin Rose, and one was Stephen Molyneux, and they were both going up against this same lawyer guy who lost both times. Also, that was Corbett's approach to debate moderation. Mm-hmm. You didn't see that in political debates. And I've been watching political debates since the first one I watched was with my dad in like 1988, right?
Yeah.
There's not even a demand of the people watching or the other people participating for clarification on so many important things.
Right.
So, that definitely shows up in your work from what I've seen of it. And I'm happy with how this went. I think that was actually an interesting story that in the end, it is you, this trial by fire gets you to, even after all the school and all this higher education, it's this trial by fire in the conspiracy world that, is it fair to say, like, sends you looking for an answer to how to defend yourself from all of this stuff that's swirling around you in an increasingly complicated world?
Yeah, I'd say the objective was always personal freedom. It's just the strategies and the end goals changed over time. Like obviously for quite some time, I'd say even when I first had my two little attempts at political crusading, voting once and then doing an informational protest sort of thing.
Yeah,
I'd always been trying to increase my personal freedom. I'd been a constitutionalist that whole time, and so at that point it was restore the Constitution. How do you do that? Well, I don't know. It's just got to restore the Constitution.
Right.
So it's nice. I mean, it worked out well because when it comes to anarchism, and not that a lot of the stuff I talk about can be applied to any ideology. There are a lot of leftist fanuans out there. People will decide to pursue lifestyle changes for a variety of reasons, some not political at all.
Sure.
I guess anarchism has been kind of a blessing because there's not really a clear strategy to abolish the state. But I don't have to deal with the baggage of the Constitution or the baggage of having to deal with paperwork with the state to try to get them to try to become a national instead of a citizen or a diplomat. I can just exercise. I can find freedom a lot. It's a lot of weight off the shoulders.
It's more bottom up
when you exit the rabbit hole.
Yeah, and you see that it's more of an effort, and obviously events like this and just hearing about what everybody here is doing and how people here work together and how people here help each other, you see a bottom-up effort to improve the world and improve the lives of the people working from the bottom up, where most solutions to creating a better or a more utopian world have always been from the top down. And, even a lot of the constitutional or the conspiratorial approaches work that way because they require the thought leader kind of figure, right, to direct everybody and tell them what they should do. And then, as we see, with InfoWars, ultimately telling people who they should vote for.
Right.
You know? And then hero worship on a grander scale than I ever thought I would see in any alternative media. I mean, it was almost on the level of like state media from a fascist or a communist country. So, yeah, great conversation. What's next for you?
What's next? The fest ends tomorrow. I'll be heading to Ohio to see Ben Stone again.
Nice.
I'm really, really looking forward to that. Love Ben, and I mean he's been influential as well. But obviously, after I became an anarchist,
right? Yeah.
So, that's next. I'll continue with the homestead in Southern Illinois, and hoping to be off grid in a handful of years. Don't know if that's gonna work out, but I'm gonna keep making progress and turning that into a self-sufficient piece of land, and publishing more books with LA Publications, and continuing to put out content on the Vonnie podcast. So not much too different.
What's the website for the publishing?
LibertyUnderAttack.com.
Okay. And for the Vonnie podcast?
VonniePodcast.com. And Vonnie is spelled V as in Victor, O, and as in Nancy, U, podcast.
And it stands for?
So it's an awkward contraction of the words voluntary, not vulnerable.
Right.
So it's about becoming as invulnerable to the coercion of the state and the servile society as humanly possible by way of lifestyle changes and various strategies.
Very bottom up. I like that. Yep. Thank you so much, Shane.
Hey, thank you, Brett.